Captain
Nanas.
But no.
Yes, perfect. Thank you. So she's really happy. Captain Butts is really happy.
Captain Spot, Stardate 13-30-14.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she narrowly missed a romantic weekend on Bajor with Chief O'Brien. It's Ambassador Danae.
I have regrets. You know, that would have been so epic.
Well, you told him to get out.
Did I?
Get off the ship. Get out, Miles.
He was a married man.
Yeah, yeah, that is correct.
But I was very attracted to his intellect, his passion, and his sense of style.
And his rolled up sleeves.
I don't know anything about O'Brien. I just realized.
He does have an interesting sense of style, but that's more about the costumers. They could never quite get casual wear right in Star Trek. It always looked a bit like Picasso. Everything has like shapes and triangles and like patterns and stuff. They can just wear something normal. That's why they usually just stay in uniform.
Yeah, it's like, hey, how can we convey futuristic casual wear? And the answer was geometric cutouts.
Pajamas of all kinds.
But pajamas with an interesting design and a cutout.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something that I've been doing, speaking of like Star Trek pajamas?
Yes, mainly because I love the segue.
I continue to watch those Star Trek boots that I found.
Oh, still all the way back from Strange New Worlds?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's this company, you know, that they make them, and they're really, really expensive, and they're really, really, you know, apparently very good quality. I've been reading the reviews and such, of course. The most recent review was this man who said, "I came across the storefront and I went in to find a pair of boots. These are not my normal style, but I have to admit, I wear them all the time and get compliments." And the whole time I'm just like, you don't even know that they're Star Trek.
He's not even a Star Trek fan? That's amazing.
No, he's just put them into his life and he's a happy man.
That's so fun.
This particular site also, they have the most unique shoes I have ever seen. They're like the variety of style and
eclecticness.
Sort of expression of your fashion. It's endless.
I want those shoes so much.
They're so amazing.
But I haven't worn
them. They come
in
like white and black.
Ooh. Oh. I did look at the Star Trek. There's a Star Trek jacket, the leather one that they wear in Picard season 3 that has like the different command colors. And it was $80. The reviews were great. And I'm like, that's okay. That's expensive for what I'd usually spend on a jacket. But then when I clicked purchase, it was $40 for delivery. I was like, are you kidding? Are you cycling this thing to me? No, that's so expensive. I could buy another jacket with the delivery fee.
Yeah. I remember going and looking at one of the leather jacket sites and just got nothing but fake vibes.
Yeah.
And then I researched the website on like Better Business Bureau or something like that, and it was just buyers beware warnings everywhere because the pictures looked great, and then they were fake reviews, and then it was a whole bunch of real reviews, and it was people like, this is just the shittiest fabric.
Garbage.
It looks nothing like it. I can't get a hold of the company, etc. So then I've been really nervous about buying clothes, except for like if it's on Etsy or something. I feel like I can trust
they're independent people. Well, speaking of buyer beware, that is exactly how Data describes the Ferengi when we first meet them. So let's get into some Star Trek.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What the fuck was that?
Segue. That was incredible. It's amazing. But first, don't ask any questions. Let's do some emails.
I have so many questions.
Go to the shuttle bay. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. This week, I have been sinned, Ambassador, and I have been taken to task, and I need you to be the judge if I have been, if I, based on what this listener has said, if I have been too harsh, and whether they are justified in berating. So this is from Joel.
Okay. Hello, Joel. They are justified, yes.
Okay, just okay. Moving on. Let's do the next email. She already sides with you, Joel. In your episode on The Cube and the Grey, Captain Ian made a disparaging remark about TNG Season 2, in which he said it is, quote, a pile of shit. Sadly, I must request a court-martial for this slanderous remark. Everything is on record. Like, I completely forgotten that I'd said this, but yes, apparently I said that Season 2 of TNG is a pile of shit, in a very offhand comment. Joel continues. Yes, the season is uneven as it features an abysmal clip episode, Shades of Grey, and suffers from the departure of Dr. Crusher. Though I do like Dr. Pulaski, even though they never gave her much to do. However, let me remind you of the strengths. Where Silence Has Lease is a solid sci-fi thriller. Elementary Dear Data, we've seen that one, is a fun holodeck romp that introduces Moriarty to the TNG canon. Q Who gives us the introduction of the Borg, need I say more? The Measure of a Man is the first truly classic TNG episode with a solid courtroom drama and a sci-fi twist. The Schizoid Man is a fun body-switching episode in which Ira Grace downloads himself into Data, giving Brent Spiner a lot of fun things to do. Time Squared is a solid bottle episode with some time travel shenanigans. Other episodes may not be classics, but they're entertaining enough. Most importantly, the season also shows the writers and actors finally starting to figure out their characters as we get more solid storylines for Worf, Riker, and Data. No, it's not the strongest season. And yes, if we had to rank all of them, it would probably be somewhere near the bottom. But pile of shit? The use of the word pile, this is amazing. The use of the word pile indicates that there are many pieces of shit within the collection. Which seems like an erroneous way to describe this particular pile of episodes. This is how we send shit, people. This is amazing. Pull it apart. It's more like a pile within a few pieces of shit strewn about. I admit, that doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And also when you like add in strings and shit, it's like stringy shit.
Just you've eaten something and it's, yeah, lots of fiber. Still, surely we should reserve such insulting remarks for true catastrophes like Code of Honor, before-mentioned Shades of Grey, and that episode where Crusher bunks a space ghost. With apologies for having to take you to task, Joel, obnoxious lower decker.
I want to be friends with Joel.
I can't argue with that takedown. I think we are friends with Joel. You are promoted to chief debater. You're the master debater of the USS Enterprise, Joel.
Congratulations. That was
a well-articulated email. I did reply. Basically saying I flagellate myself before you, I apologize, please forgive my sincere apologies, and I will never ever say something bad about TNG season 2 this week.
You can't promise that.
I said this week.
Oh, okay, this week. Okay.
Joel replied.
Oh.
Hi, Ian. Your written apology is greatly appreciated. Rest assured, I will contact your superiors and rescind my request for a court-martial. Jeremy and Chris, please ignore that email that you got from Joel.
I thought that was your beautiful boss, because I'm the ambassador.
Ambassadors don't have a rank. For the last time, ambassador. Golly. Ambassador, do you think Joel was fair in his comments, even though you haven't seen... You've seen half of those episodes, actually. So, do you think Joel was fair in his takedown? Or just well articulated?
I mean, yes, both.
Damn it. I was hoping to get him on one of them.
No. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed that a lot.
Well, if myself or the ambassador have offended you in any other way... please write to us, but in the most articulate way possible, and not just one line your shit.
If you need any assistance, try to see if this person is on Discord, and then they can like assist you in the writing.
Oh no, it's fine. Here's Joel's email address. Beep. Well, yes, any other emails, send them to captainspod@cinemasins.com on Twitter/X. At CaptainsPodCS, and join the Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins. You can send your episode recommendations to those places and to email. There's a thread on Discord for it. We have so many great time travel suggestions. Keep them coming. I think we're up to, 20 different episodes have been recommended. There is a clear winner, which will be announced later on. Back to the show. Okay, Ambassador, last week we did Looking for Parmach in all the wrong places, and I did a terrible job of synopsisizing the episode that led into it. Now, this is going to be so much easier, because Cupid is kind of a follow-up episode, and here's what you need to know about what happened in the previous episode. The captain is forced to go on holiday and meets a person who's a criminal. They kind of fall in love. They get it on. She's a bit shady. Reveal she's...
This is what happened before?
This is what happens in the previous episode.
Why are we not watching that one? That sounds awesome.
I think we have watched it together at some point, but not for the show. I can't remember.
I don't remember. Oh, is it the archaeologist?
That's it. The archaeologist lady. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So this is where they make Picard go there and he has this book that he's supposed to read, and the book is like
hot pants.
Basically,
hot pants. Yeah.
Basically like come fuck me book.
Oh no no no. It's Riker gives him a model to give to Riker tells him to buy a model, what's it called? Horgon. And he just says, buy this for me, it's great. Picard buys it, puts it next to him, and it's basically the symbol for sex. And it's just like, you are displaying that for, like, Mahajaran?
Mahajaran?
No, I do not want Mahajaran.
Yeah. And then so she's, like, all coming on to Picard. Picard's like, I don't know about that. But then he kind of is interested. And then at the very end, there's this, like, nefarious thing going on. She was trying to steal something. What was it?
The Tox Utat.
I meant, like, what is it, not what's it called? Because... that doesn't give me any context at all. That could be a can of fucking tuna for all I know.
Yeah, it's a really powerful weapon from the future.
That's right. And it was like a little square or something?
Yeah, basically. It's this little square artifact thing.
And then there was somebody else that was coming for it.
A Ferengi.
Oh, they were like from the future or something?
Yep, these two guys from the future tracked it down to this place. There's a Ferengi that's looking for it. You remembered! It's so great!
Oh, my brain, man. It's working.
But yes, that's basically what happens. Picard and Vash get it on, and then Vash decides to go off and continue her illegal adventures. So you remember Vash, which is the main thing. Okay. That's all you need to know.
Okay. You're right. We have seen that episode before.
I can't remember when, but we definitely, like, when we're working in the same city, we'll throw on Star Trek in the background. And
that must have been it.
To explain things.
Yeah. It definitely wasn't for the show.
No, we haven't covered Captain's Holiday for the show, but we should. But anyway.
We should never hang out outside of the show, though, because then this is going to keep happening where I've actually seen something and we didn't capture the audio.
Could you imagine if, like, I'd shown you the episode and you're just like, I've seen this episode because I recognize her, but nothing else would make sense.
Yes, I can imagine that.
It would have been horrible. I'm so sorry. Okay, well, with that, let's go and watch the final episode in our unconventional love series, Cupid. Let's head over to the holodeck. We'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief. Bye-bye. Welcome to 10 Forward, part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings, semi-immediate thoughts and feelings, on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice from the replicator ambassador?
Let's have some, like, Nottingham mead.
Oh, you know? Some mead. I wasn't thinking those kinds of spirits, m'lady. Yeah, What would I have? I would have that big chunk of turkey that Data holds up when he's, like, immediately transformed into a Friar Tuck. I want that. I just want to nom on it. But while I'm nomming on that, give us a synopsis.
Whoa.
Whoa there.
In today's episode, we have a very interesting back and forth whiplash of what it feels like to go to an archaeological conference versus cosplay.
Yeah.
At a convention.
Mm-hmm.
All with a little Q mixing it up with his arrow that ends up stabbing Data right in the chest.
Yep. Fortunately, his motor functions appear to be intact.
Will our most important question be answered? That being, why do women always smash people over the head with vases?
Stop it.
No,
I could go off.
That question isn't answered. But do we answer the question of what Q was doing? Also kind of no, but, you know, he's just cute. Do we answer the question of whether Picard gets to stay happily ever after with this chaos woman? No, not that either.
Mm-hmm.
But we did get to see Worf in tights.
Yeah, we did.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's basically it. Vash, a previous flame of Captain Picard, returns to the ship. At the same time, that Q returns to the ship, desperate to pay off a favor, which, you know, I said that I told you the most important things that you needed to know before going into this episode. Completely forgot about that as well. My bad.
I don't trust you anymore.
I should start, like, watching the episode ahead of time. Q is determined to help Picard discover that love is a weakness and he is not immune to it. And then Robin Hood happens and they will live happily ever after. Overall thoughts and feelings, Ambassador. As we finish our series on romantic episodes,
yeah.
How did this one hit you?
For Genuinely, I forgot that this was in the romance category for a hot second.
It was.
I ended up just having fun, you know, just been like, yeah, I'm just having, just watching an episode of Star Trek, and sort of forgot that it was thematic. Mm-hmm. And then it was I think this absolutely hits the unconventional love category because it's 100%. Not Picard naturally finding love. It's Picard, Vosh. For like, how did she even get on the ship? She's
part of the delegation.
But she didn't even seem to act like that. She seemed to act like she's like not really part of it. I was waiting for this to be where she snuck aboard during the archaeological thing, was gonna zip on down to the planet while everyone was bored with the Picard speech, and then find something, and then there was gonna be like a rescue or some sort of a fight between the two of them because she was trying to steal something, and instead Q shows up and it turns into Maid Marian. And I was like, what the fuck is going
on? Exactly what I thought. And it just like hard left turn into, now we're going to do Robin Hood instead.
It was so abruptly different than what I expected. Like,
yeah,
Picard goes to give his speech and then everyone starts to just slowly shift into, and what happened to all the people that were there?
That gone, doesn't matter. They died. Q killed them. I forgot to mention, your speech was so boring, I did them the mercy of a swift death.
Yeah. Like, not only does Vosh not come back immediately, nobody that was there, only our crew returns.
Yeah.
Well, like, really, a day really has confusing.
Passed. I think, like, an actual day passed. Like, I think the real crime here is that Picard never gets to deliver his speech. The council leaves, and he doesn't get his big moment in the archaeology sunlight. Super sad. Yeah.
It was weird. It was kind of like, I think I've said this before, but it felt a bit like, we have access to some costumes. We really want to do this. How can we make this happen? And then just kind of Q is the answer to any question of how can we make something
anytime
ridiculous
happen.
Anytime
we want to do this. Well,
yeah.
I think at this point they knew that there was going to be one Q episode a season because for the most part, he was a fan favorite. People love having him around. And this, from my behind the scenes digging, they were originally going to do this based on Excalibur and like King Arthur and stuff like that. And who's the Merlin and Jenna, not Genevieve, Gwendolyn.
Guinevere.
But
my namesake,
Robin Hood, was it Men in Tights or the other one? There was a Robin Hood movie that was coming out the same year. So they decided to do a Robin Hood tie-in to capitalize on all of the buzz and to tentpole with the Robin Hood movie that was coming out. So yeah, they hard shifted. And I imagine it was cheaper to do Robin Hood than it was King Arthur, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind. I mean, I don't mind it. It just, to me, it's so weird to see Picard awkward.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
His character is a bit different this time, like in this episode. He almost like embraces Robin Hood a bit.
Yeah, a little bit. When he runs off into the forest and says, I'm doing this on my own.
You have your orders, Commander.
Yeah, that was I'm gonna go prove that I am able to do all this. But I couldn't tell if it was because he was blinded by love or he didn't want to risk the crew. And I'm still not entirely sure about that. And I also don't know that I am fully understanding if he was head over heels for Vosh or just kind of like, yeah, I'm interested in her, but this is being blown way out of proportion, because that he was so annoyed with Q. So it was also awkward because it wasn't like I believed that he was desperately in love with Vosh. It was more like, whoa, wow, it's good to see you again. But this is a person who he can't trust. He doesn't trust. He shows he doesn't trust her by peeking around in her space and finding evidence that he shouldn't trust her. So I didn't really like sink into that he had found someone that made sense for his character, or
it's an infatuation.
Yeah. You know how like in Strange New Worlds you've got Pike with remember female characters' names. Yeah. I hate it so much.
Captain Bananas.
happy. Captain Butts is really happy. And they're like, they have this really interesting relationship. They're really like intelligent, and it seems really believable that they like each other. And
yes,
it seems believable that he kind of comes to terms that he likes her more than he maybe wanted to like her. Of course, he's a very complex character because he knows he's going to die, which would just fuck up any boner. Let's just be honest.
It's fair. Yeah.
But Picard is different. I don't. You have all these like little short bursts of seeing him with people, mm-hmm. and he's not quite like Riker-esque, and he's certainly not TOS guy, Shatner, Kirk. He's not Kirky.
Yeah.
So he's this unique kind of person that I feel like I would have a pretty good idea of who he would be. Then it's Beverly, okay? It's Beverly.
Of course it's Beverly. He is... I absolutely see what you mean. It feels like a bit of an odd pairing because... Yes, Vash is like determined and like intelligent and resourceful, but
she's a criminal.
She's a criminal as well. Like, she's pretty sneaky, and I don't imagine these two people together either. And that's why. So overall, I like this episode as a bit of fun and a bit of fluff. But the second you dig any deeper into the plot or the logic, it completely falls apart because what's the lesson here? Like, that's my question.
Yeah. what do we take away from this episode?
Nothing. At zero. Nothing at all, because the setup is that after the previous adventure with Q, I won't get into details, but they do
Q a
solid.
Thank you for helping me understand that part of this, really.
Oh, you can if you okay, absolutely. I would love nothing more than to derail this and explain the previous Q episode. Actually, I don't want to spoil it because it is an episode we will watch. But the crew of the Enterprise help Q. And at the end of the episode, he disappears. And now he's returned and he wants to repay this favor. He doesn't like it hanging over him. Well, whatever.
This episode says that you helped me to not kill myself.
Essentially, yes. Yeah. And he wants to pay off this favor. And he's somehow... The way that he's going to pay off this favor is by... showing Picard that love is a weakness and that he has the power to love but shouldn't, and does, but the entire plan to prove that is, I'm going to kidnap this woman I see that you have an interest in and you have to rescue her. But the problem is Picard destroys this with one sentence when he says, I'd rescue a stranger, I'd rescue whoever that was, as would the crew. Like, this isn't proving whatever Q thinks it's proving. It's
exactly.
Just,
that's what
he would
that's what
save
I'm saying.
A person yeah. that you've put in distress.
Yeah. Q is foiled this whole thing, and he's even this episode ends up being more about Q's obsession with Vash.
Yes, because he ends up falling in love with Vash. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, they go off together at the end because mm-hmm. that's a thing that happens because she wants to go and
that
she
makes
wants
sense
to
me.
Right. Her chaos meter at a 10 out of 10. She yeah. wants to. And she's very selfish, and she wants to go see what's out there, and she wants to see things that have never been seen before. And she's like, it's nice to see you, Picard. And the whole time as well, she's easily switching into these roles of using people to her advantage. And you really see that play out. Not only, like, maybe you wouldn't really question that in the beginning of the episode when she and Picard kind of see each other again.
Mm.
She's immediately, like, coming on to him again, and he's succumbing to that, or he's giving in to that, or whatever. And maybe it's been a while since you've seen her in the other episode, so you kind of forget how shady she is, and you're just like, you know what, it's fine. But she really shows that part of the character when she immediately turns it on for when she realizes that her life is in danger. She's like, hey, let me just rethink this.
Oh,
honestly,
it's genius. It's my favorite part of the episode. How Vash reacts to the Q puzzle.
Hilarious.
And how it derails him is so great. Because not only is she's like, fuck it, I'll marry you. And he's like, what?
What?
He turns over, she turns over Picard, and he's like, what? Like, well, this isn't how the game was supposed to go. Like, that's a genius way to include
smart.
The Vash character.
I also really enjoyed that what I think the episode is also showing us, because it's not that part of me is like, yeah, it doesn't go anywhere, but we still see some interesting things, right? Like, we get to see that part of the thing between Vash and Picard is that yeah. they both want to be in control. And to a certain degree, maybe the episode is showing us that Picard doesn't always have the best plans, and that's fine and everything, but like, she has a plan. She's saying, you need to go do this, this, and this. And Picard literally picks her up to go chuck her out of a window,
so
I guess. And it was
uncomfortable. I love that she has the better plan.
She does. She seems to have the better plan, and it seems to make more sense to go with her. But she also draws a sword on Picard and then hands it over to bad guy, which I can't remember.
It's like Guy of Gisborne.
Guy, yes. She hands it literally to bad guy. And bad guy and she had had a previous conversation, it seemed. It seemed like they'd gone in with a plan that she had set Picard up in a way.
Oh, no, no, no. This was a spur of the moment thing where she's okay. Like, we're not getting out of this. I'm going to turn tail. Because she'd previously mentioned that Robin Hood had used sorcery and witchcraft to seduce her. So she's like doubling down on that setup from earlier.
Interesting. Well, she does say your wedding present, just like I told you. She kind of eludes that there was a previous conversation. There's something she says there that made me think that she had said, let me take care of it. I've got a plan or something like this. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that shows us and was an interesting part for me of how she is taking control of her life. She is not the kind of woman that's going to become the Maid Marian character, fall, and I have no power here, Picard. Help
Which
me,
is really
save
smart.
Me.
Like, it that's was a so really great. Smart direction to take the story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was definitely handicapped by being in what, like the 17th century or whatever she was in. Like, that was the biggest part for her there, was realizing that she, you know, without any phasers, she had to use her wit to get
And she's
out
great.
Of
that's
her
exactly what she does. She's great at that. That's what she does in the previous episode. That's what her character is built on. The more I think about it, the more it is insane how Picard acts in this episode, because like we said, Q's plan is dumb and doesn't make any sense. And Picard is just like, we'll rescue whoever that is. It doesn't matter if it's Vash or not. He then undermines that by saying, this is personal, crew stay behind. What he should say is, this is a humanitarian mission. As a Starfleet crew, we are going to rescue this person in distress. The fact that he says, everybody stay behind, this is personal, and me and my boner will fix this, is showing his hand that it is a personal thing. He should just be completely detached and say, me and the crew, we're going to come up with a plan, and we're going to rescue this person as if it was anybody else, because it's our duty as Starfleet officers to do that. It's so
weird
that he goes off on his own.
That's what Q was trying to prove, is that Picard had a part of him that could be exploited.
Yeah.
And that was essentially, if I interpret this correctly, Q's gift to Picard. His way of paying him back was saying, hey, here's the chink in your armor, buddy. Fix it. Or don't fix it and die. And that was an interesting, for me, that was an interesting kind of like, oh, I think that's what this episode was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it spent a lot of time doing other things. And so I just didn't jump directly into the part where I believed that Picard was head over heels. But like you said, I think the show either failed at showing that in the right way, or they did show it because he did something so irrational that is out of character. And the writers are like, he actually does have this problem. He does have a little chink in his armor. He does have a blind spot. And maybe it is for bad girls.
I think, especially considering how this chink in his armor is essentially never, ever, ever referred to again or capitalized on in any way, there's a lot of manufacturing in this episode. So the first half...
That's what it felt like for me, too.
Yeah, the first half is manufacturing that he's hidden Vash from everybody and that he's embarrassed and he's private. I get it. That kind of fits with Picard's character. Like, he's not going to share his dalliances while on vacation with the crew. Well,
can I say real quick, I didn't like that about Vash.
Yeah, like, no, absolutely.
She's so manipulative.
Yeah. This makes Vash should be like, yeah, that checks out. This makes sense that we're not a relationship. This was a one-night stand, essentially.
But I felt like what she was doing is she was trying to ally herself with Picard immediately so that she is closer to her goal of going and stealing something, most likely. So she's really playing on his emotions. That's why I didn't like it. It wasn't that it wasn't written well. It's like, this is dirty.
I don't even think it's that deep. I think it is really, really superficial. I think it's the worst part of the episode where I think she's come there to exploit a relationship with Picard, but has then become genuinely hurt that nobody mentioned her, because there's no evidence there that she's doing that to get somewhere. It seems like she's really, really hurt. And it's all to set up this Q adventure.
Yeah.
Which sucks. Vash should be bigger than that.
Maybe, yeah.
Essentially, you have 20 minutes of manufacturing Picard being defensive, manufacturing Vash being offended, to then get to Q being the cure and the and able to pay back this favor that he has. It is like 20 minutes of changing characters and establishing character flaws to then have 20 minutes of Robin Hood. It's so weird.
Not enough Robin Hood, but then also Q doesn't even let her do her thing. He intervenes and tries to get her killed. Like, he's not even, Q isn't even just like setting something into motion and watching it happen and just sort of participating as a viewer, as a sheriff character. He's like, oh, arrest her because she actually does love Picard or whatever. It's really, really pushed. Well, the whole thing was very pushed. And really, we saw so little of our beloved characters in costume. And it was a fun beat. There was some really fun stuff that happened.
Oh, my goodness.
When they land in Nottingham as this little crew. And it was such a relief from this, like, forced, inflated, and entirely unbelievable scenario between this Vash character that apparently cares what people think, which I don't believe about her character at all, and Picard, who apparently, I do believe that Picard would be uncomfortable, and I liked how he sort of defended his position. Like, I don't talk about my personal stuff with people. That's just not who I am. He didn't really cave on that. He was trying to sort of recover from suddenly seeing this previous, and I wouldn't even call her a love interest, really. It was a someone that he was interested in under false pretenses because she was lying with the
well,
first
time
that they
met. That's the crazy thing. Like I said, it's a one-night stand. It's a fling. Like, it's wild to me that we latch on. Like, I'm glad we brought her back, but it's wild that it's latched onto as this big thing, and that's what I mean by it being, like, so manufactured. Like, and you could argue that Q is manufacturing it himself, but the fact that Picard plays along, like, hook, line, and sinker and does this solo thing is just, like, reinforcing it. It's so crazy. It's like, just be Robin Hood. Just be Robin Hood.
It was fun. When we finally get there, it was fun. But there's no real... It's one of those episodes of TNG where you end the episode knowing that everyone's going to forget what they just watched and pretend like it never happened.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
In this episodic series, you rarely have the callbacks. You know, it wouldn't make much sense for the next episode to start off with, like, a council session between everyone about how they're feeling after their Robin Hood-esqueness, you know?
Yeah, I do. And I think that's why this episode gets a pass. And it is an episode that I watch frequently. Like, it would be one that I'd throw on with my dad a lot because I'm not really diving into the plot. What I'm looking forward to is Worf saying, "Sir, I protest. I am not a merry man."
Can I tell you something? Okay. So in my, I'm doing this whole thing. I see Data as Friar Tuck and, like, all this stuff. They all beam over. I write down, I'm predicting that Worf is not going to be a merry man, like, in the happy sense of the term.
That's so funny.
And then he says, "I protest, I am not a merry man." And I was like, oh my God, he actually said it.
It's one of the best lines in all of Star Trek. He is so disheartened and he's like, "I protest. This isn't happening, people." And I die every time when he smashes the mandolin because it's just, there's no wind up. It's just one hand whack into the tree. It's just this solid swing, just like, you used every ounce of Klingon in you to destroy that mandolin. And then he's just like, "Sorry."
But he's not.
He's not sorry.
He's not sorry.
I think he is. I think he's genuinely
sorry.
He's just like,
I guess it's kind of like whenever you have a toddler and they just can't control themselves and then they realize they've done something a bit major and then they apologize for it.
Like, I am a Klingon. Like, I as your colleague, I am sorry. As a Klingon, I had to do that.
Oh my God.
It's great.
It was unexpected in some ways. I knew that I knew Worf was going to say something, but he doesn't.
Dong.
Like, Geordi is so happy. He is so
grinning away.
Happy.
Not plucking cords, just plucking
his
strings.
He's trying to, like, figure it out. He's got this grin on his face. He's in the sun. I mean, it's a little bit wacky how happy they all are to just be
super chill.
Nottingham characters.
Super relaxed. Not worried if, like, the ship is going to blow up or is out of control because the crew isn't there. Just happy bunnies.
They're like, oh, we're on a Q adventure. This is fun.
Yeah,
and
it's one of those episodes. This will be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and their relaxedness, I think, helped a bit with the rest of the episode. you know, like the awkwardness between Vosh and Picard. And we didn't even talk about Beverly Crusher. Like, that was an interesting situation, too. So, juxtapose, like, you have this
love
triangle, the Vosh meeting people, and the Riker flirtation. You've got all this sort of stuff happening that's really awkward, and then, you know, an archaeological speech. And then we're just shifted over into this totally different episode where everyone's happily Robining Hooding.
It's those two back-to-back scenes. It's the first half. It's the strongest. It's my favorite part of the first half of the episode, where he's at breakfast with Vash, and like the door goes off, and you just see his soul leave his body.
I didn't understand why it was funny.
You wouldn't, though, because you don't know that Beverly's at the door. But he knows, like, he knows he's missed a dinner date, which a breakfast date, which means he has to explain why this other woman is in his quarters at breakfast, because she clearly stayed the night. And this is just a can of worms he didn't want to have to open. And just, it's one of the rare expressions that we get from Patrick Stewart, where he's just like, oh, fuck.
I've been caught. Well, you laughed. And I looked over at your screen. I was like, what? What's funny? Because I missed it. So then I rewound it to watch it again, knowing then who was on the other side. And I appreciated that moment so much more.
Oh, it's so great.
It was so subtle. I wasn't entirely sure.
And I wonder if, like, in the run of it, because there's another episode where he has breakfast with Crusher. So it's established that breakfast is a thing that they do. And I wonder if that was in this season, which is why it would have made sense to do it.
But they did a great job of just kind of a couple lines that explain it away. And you get to see then Beverly and Vosh at the table together. That was dynamic, and I really enjoyed that part.
It's so fun. The sass that Beverly has is incredible.
She's so delightful. And seeing her after watching her in Picard, and she's so beautiful.
She is. She's movie star beautiful.
She's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then to switch back to TNG and see her when there were no wrinkles, there was no, you know, white hair, just a different era for her body, but to still see just her acting chops, it was so fun.
Just the joy in her eye when she's like, oh, really? Tell me more about Jean-Luc.
Yes, there's a joy in that she knows that she and Jean-Luc have a love of each other, and it's a professional love. And if it does border on, like, relational interest, it's something that they're, like, willing to explore to a certain level, and they don't want it to compromise their professionalism.
Absolutely.
So it's this very interesting specific love or specific care of each other, that when you see Beverly then interact with a character like Vosh, who is just like sexuality and chaos and adventure and a completely different element of something that would be attractive to Picard, and to see Beverly and Vosh not turn into a cat fight, but rather be like,
oh, it's great.
I liked it.
Beverly,
I really enjoyed that.
Wants to know more about her. It's like, you have the key to something I want to find out about Jean-Luc. And to then, like, take that straight into 10 forward, where Riker just gets his number called. Like, straight away, Horndog, like, mounts her in 10 forward. And Vash is just like, oh, you must be Riker, and just deflates him. You just see him become this 2-foot man that's just like, I've been exposed.
Yes.
So great. So good.
It's so important for them to never let Riker marry.
And it's like, it's a great bit of self-awareness that the show has as well. It's like, we know he's Kirk. Like, we know he's a bit of a horn dog, and we know, like, he's the tall, buff guy. He's the Commander Ransom, even though Ransom hasn't happened yet. But it's great to take him down a peg or two. It's so fun.
Yeah, I suppose. But when I watched TNG, I was infatuated with Riker in that way, where I'm just like, oh, he's so handsome.
He's the reason I have a beard.
So I don't know why I never really picked up on how annoying it would be to have a horn dog like character. And this is the closest I've seen in what we've watched so far. And I'm not suggesting that we do a Riker Horndog series, because I'm sure they would be very uncomfortable.
Eternity never looked so lovely.
Horndog Star Trek wide, I'm sure, would be a very interesting season of Captain's Pod.
Yeah, that would be extremely uncomfortable. It would be a lot of me not liking Kirk.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of Kirk is what I've heard.
Yeah.
But with Riker, this is one of those instances where I I'm realizing that this part of his personality is, it's weird. He, in that moment, okay, what we are seeing on camera is the door opens before it has even hit the edges of the frame.
Yes.
He is double taking to the door.
Oh my God.
He's fully ready to mount, like you
said. I'm amazed he doesn't pass out from the rush of blood.
He is not a human. He is a human mixed with some kind of an alien creature that can just smell pheromones.
Yeah.
Like,
uh-huh.
And he pounces on this woman to capture her interest so quickly. And that is a little bit awkward.
Like, yeah, it is.
Now I'm thinking about it and it's like, oh, he's turned from this chair mounting character to like a female mounting character.
Listen, it's the 60s. It's the time of free love, the 2360s.
You set me up. Face that I just gave you, I'm like, it is not the 60s.
Not the 60s? Yes, it is.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's
so that
it's
was
fun.
That was interesting, and I didn't know. Again, I'm like, Vasha's here. What is she up to? I wanted to see Beverly continue to just take her down with her beauty and intellect, and just being one step ahead. And Beverly's confidence in her place on the ship, and her place with the crew, and her place with her captain, and how upsetting that could have been for Vosh. That would have been sexy fun.
Yeah, TNG wasn't really interested in doing anything with Deanna or Beverly. ever really much beyond this,
but that's quickly like deflated, and so like those were really fun, and it was awkward. The rest of it was kind of awkward and a little slower, and like it's the traditional like uncomfortable love thing we see where you have to have some kind of miscommunication and
have
resolve
the
at the end.
Yeah,
and then we're just thrown into this comedy skit with Worf, you know, smashing a mandolin, and
it's so good,
and Deanna just picking up a bow and arrow for practice and like launching an arrow into Data.
Yeah, that's on Data. He shouldn't be standing downrange. If that arrow is hitting you, you're in the wrong position, because she didn't fire it and then it go behind her. It still went forward. Like, Data is a fool. He's in the wrong place.
It was pretty funny though. That was.
Oh, it's great. He just looks down at it.
What else happened though? Oh, the first thing that I thought was really funny is they hear the sound of horse hooves and they turn, and here comes bad guy.
A guy, yeah.
Bad guy. And Worf just straight up charges a fucking horse. And
it's so great.
I was so excited. I'm like, get him!
Let's go!
Get him! Like,
it's like he says, like, I must protest, I'm not a merry man line. And this rage is just building inside him. And that could have been a good guy. It could have been a villain. He just whips out his sword. He's like, let's go. And just
instantly
goes to town.
He has the worst. Like, he's just down there and they're swinging around. And I, for no seconds did I back out and think, they're on a set. That's a real horse. This is taking some training. Like, what am I watching? Now I am with you in this moment. I'm thinking, holy shit.
That was impressive.
That must have been a stunt double that did it.
With a horse?
No, like a stunt Worf.
I'm convinced it was Michael Dorn the whole time. Had to be. Absolutely had to be.
So then you got that attack. And then all of a sudden the entire crew turns into like swordsmen?
Oh, yeah. Geordi, Riker, everyone has epic sword ability. Whereas they should just be letting Data walk around bending swords, just like blocking it with his arm, blocking it with his head. Like, Data should be the one doing all of the attacking here, not the humans.
It was interesting. I guess it's like, in my head, I think they must have been going to the holodeck. Like, this must be, they're so happy to be there. Are they all thinking that they're just on a holodeck and there's really no, like, stakes?
I think they kind of are, because although Picard at the end says, if any of my people have been hurt, like, I mean, what am I going to do to you, Q? Picard's not going to do anything.
Right.
Like, he's outraged. I kind of get the impression throughout the whole episode that none of them really feel like they're in danger
or
at risk.
No.
Like, okay, Worf gets cut on the arm. Maybe that's to show us that injury is possible here. But bottom line, if anything happened, we've seen this happen before. The problem is, Q has killed the entire cast and brought them back to life. Like, there is no, by the time you get to season 5 or wherever we are, season 4, there are no stakes with Q, to be honest.
No.
He's done the fucked up thing and he always undoes it. So there's no real risk here, which is why I think the tone has to be super funny like this. It has to be a bit dumb.
It was definitely silly and fun and Ren Faire, and I'm all for it. And they were all kind of excited to be those characters as well.
Yeah, apart from Worf, but yes.
So we've talked about this at other episodes as well. After watching this episode, I now feel like I would have a hard time if I ever were to go to a convention not cosplaying as like either Troy or Beverly in the Nottingham outfits. Like that's too tempting.
Of course. And it's pretty easy to throw together as well.
Yeah.
Or you just got to carry a pot around and be useless. That's it.
This is what I'm saying. I'm going to carry a pot. I'm going to carry a bow and an arrow. And I need to make sure that this bow has like a big old flat magnet on it. And then whoever is with us, who's also cosplaying as Data.
I'll be Data.
Yeah. Okay, okay. Just every once in a while I fling just it, you know. Arrow. And it just, you have like a big chest piece. Yeah. It's just one big magnet. I shoot you. And then I pull this pot out, which has to be able to like be a pot that can fall apart and then get put back together and then fall apart. Mm-hmm. And I'm just smashing people's heads the whole time.
Amazing. No, without consent, just smashing people over the head.
Like, how fun would it be to go with a group of friends as this particular episode?
Best cosplay ever. It'd be amazing.
It'd be so fun.
Immediately recognizable as well. I have a point. I want to see if you agree with it or not. Okay. I actually think this is the perfect amount of Robin Hood. Like, it takes over 20 minutes to get there. But I think if they'd have just said, the conceit here is Robin Hood, he snaps his fingers, everyone's Robin Hood, and then we cut to credits, I think 40 minutes of it would have been too much. I think doing half on the Enterprise, although the setup is a bit shit, it does make the 20 minutes of Robin Hood kind of more fun and impactful. I think it works better this way.
I don't just think it depends
on... Would you have wanted an entire episode of Robin Hood?
All Robin Hood.
Just all of it.
But not exactly the kind of episode we saw. And I don't know if they would have done this, but exploring the difference between Vosh and Picard. Picard realizing that he and Vosh are not good for each other would have proven Q's point to a certain degree. But if she got to it first, that seemed to be really undermining Q's entire point. But I don't think that they knew what to do with them. And I think they knew they had to get back to the ship and just wrap it up, because it was so much setup of Picard and Vosh's relationship on ship before we got to the Robin Hood kind of thing.
It kind of didn't need the whole crew to be down there fighting swords. Definitely didn't need Beverly and Deanna.
Well, that was it too. Like, we really didn't see much of the crew in action. I do think that it was nice, though, to see the crew, like, supporting the captain giving the speech.
And... Oh, it's fun to see them, like, revealed under the hoods. And then
They
come out to save the day, yeah.
Which, you know, it's them whenever they show up in the red cloaks, still. No, I was talking about, like, when Picard is giving his speech and they're in 10 forward or whatever room they're in on the ship, and the crew is, like, in the back supporting the captain, I really liked that part, too. And I also like that it shows his character. You know, he's really, really passionate about archaeology. Yeah. It was a bit boring, but you forget. He actually said something. Let me see. I think I wrote it down in my notes, because he was sort of defending his writing at some point in time. And he said that he's addressing the greatest minds in the fields of archaeology. Mm. And he had looked into everything there is on Tagus 3.
Yeah, all of it.
And these are like little throwaway lines that, if you stop and think about it, gives you so much information about a character that obviously is really important to somebody who wrote it. This is a character who, rather than read a book or play an app game that you know exists or go to the holodeck and, you know, go on vacation, he spends all of his time reading up on the most interesting planet that has the most interesting archaeological finds. And part of his speech, which I know we're not really listening to because we're watching the Q shenanigans start to happen with the hats appearing. Mm-hmm. His speech starts with how many important things were discovered on this planet. Like, this is how much has been discovered of those. This is how many are significant. And I found myself getting really into that a bit.
I want to hear the rest of this speech, lecture. Too.
Yeah, it's like there's something about Tagus 3 that has Picard's full and undivided attention. And that makes me, a Picard fan, want to know more about Tagus 3. So maybe my cosplay really should be interesting. An archaeological find on Tagus 3. Just to attract Picard. Discovered
by wow. Oh, we're going deep.
Just like, come to me, Picard.
Come find me. Unscavenge me.
And maybe it's weird because my best friend is an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. She's a legit certified digging archaeologist. In the sand.
Yeah.
This week, she's actually in the field excavating land to see if there's a site that goes back to like the 1700s and stuff to see if they can like find some things. I'm just like, oh my God, this is so cool.
So
she was over here putting together her gear and, you know, gearing up for this thing. And so to see Picard be really into it is, it's definitely boring. And I know why we're not spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
So, but maybe just like a little bit about that, a little bit of a setup. Give me like 10 minutes of a setup.
This is what we need. I think if this came out today, you could have like a bonus episode or like a DVD extra where he actually delivers that speech and gives the entire presentation. I would love that so much. Because the opening is beautifully written and he's like, this is how he's going to frame it. And if you'll forgive me the conceit, I think I'd like to take you on my adventure through this fight. Let's go. Let's have the adventure.
I love listening to his speeches. And also it shows his character as well. He's drinking cups of tea or coffee or whatever. And in the background are three or four drinking mugs in the background as well.
That's really clever.
So on the set, you know, you've got Deanna, the counselor there, just checking in. Hey, are you getting enough sleep? Like, you're really stressed about this. I think you should take care of yourself. And you've got him just amped up because of how important it is. And even though it's like kind of boring, it's like, wow, this is to him one of the most important things he's ever going to do. And Q fucks it up.
Like, it's
Q fucks it up.
That's the heartbreak, is that I hope in my headcanon they reconvene, they do it all again. But it's so cruel of Q to do it. Like, he genuinely, and this is where, again, the plot falls apart as soon as you look deep into it. Q is genuinely bugged by this favor that he owes Picard. But he is, like, doing so much damage. Like, you're literally the best favor you could give him is never see the man again.
And he says that. Yeah. Picard says, I don't need anything from you. Just leave me alone.
Absence. Just go.
Q and his own crazy is forcing a situation to occur. And I think because the episode shows us that Q is forcing this and we have a relationship that feels a bit forced, that's why it falls apart a bit for me.
Yeah.
And so I either want to see, like, this episode would have been so interesting if he would have transported the crew to this Tagus 3. Like, he offers Picard to do it and Picard turns him down. It's like, that seems like that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
He does it anyway, but he does it in the form of like Robin Hood. Like, maybe there's a forest there. I don't know. Like, there's a way to make it work where if they wanted to use these costumes, they could. But it felt like it was two separate episodes.
But either way,
I had a good time. Either way, I enjoyed it. How do you not enjoy seeing the crew dressed the way that they're dressed, having a good time in the woods?
Yeah, it's the definition of just switch your brain off and enjoy it. And I'm really happy to do that in this one because the funny moments are so, so funny. It's so, so fun. Like, somebody just wrote down on a post-it note, we're going to dress Worf up as Will Scarlet. And that was how the episode was born. It's like, well, we're finding a way to make sure that happened. Oh, John Delancey's about? It's going to be a Q episode.
This was a note passed in a meeting about Tagus 3 and everyone was bored. You know, like the writers are like, okay, let's talk about Tagus 3. Let's really unpack the possibilities of them going here, like what this is. Yeah. And everyone's listening to this and all the writers are just passing around this note and it starts off with Worf as this and then someone adds underneath there, ha ha ha, Data as this, you know, like, and it gets all the way around the room. The teacher sees the note, picks it up, is like, well, fuck you, we'll do this too, and mashed them together. And that's how we got this episode.
We're going to do it. It's amazing.
Also, Vosh, get the fuck out of Picard's chair.
Oh, get your feet off of her chair. Get out of his quarters. Like, so
like
cheeky.
We should transition to the sins, maybe, because that's like, wow.
But to be fair, nice legs for a human.
I wasn't looking at her legs. I was looking at her soul, and I say, go.
Yeah.
Just get out. I don't want her anywhere near these people. She is chaos. She is danger.
She's
fun. We ever see her again, by the way?
Yes, like, we do.
Oh, you do?
We see her in... She turns up in Deep Space Nine. In the only episode where Q appears, Q lands on Deep Space Nine with Vash, and that's basically where they part ways. So we do get a follow-up to what happened to Q and Vash in the future.
So Q and Vash adventure together for a while.
For an amount of time, and then they part ways, yeah. But we do see what happens to Vash.
I just don't believe that Vash didn't teach Q how to procreate.
Oh, interesting. Now, I think she's smart enough to keep him... Well, A, I genuinely don't think the Q are interested. And B, I think even if he was, Vash would be clever enough to keep him at arm's length, I would imagine.
I don't know. Vash seems like a character who's power hungry.
I'm amazed she didn't demand having Q powers. Like, make me a Q.
Yeah, she would want to, like, have all of the stuff.
Yeah. On that point, though, it is, like, there's a really interesting line where Q is like, oh, if I'd known that this was your weakness, I'd have appeared as a woman. And it just speaks even more to how fucked up Q is. Like,
he genuinely
would have done to manipulate him.
Yeah, for funsies.
Yeah, so interesting. Ambassador, before we move into the sins, how many pips would you give this episode?
How many are there total? Four?
Four pips.
I would give this one a 2.5.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be two gold pips and one black pip. It's
Lieutenant, but if I'm adding in
senior grade, whatever.
Like, so it's weird because I want to have a grading system that goes through the different elements of a show.
Yeah.
Sets, design,
story. We can do that if you really want.
Well, it's just it changes things a bit. It does. I don't know, because like I loved seeing the costumes. Anytime you have a chance to kind of show a set change or costume change, like I like the set on this one as well. We had a cool, like, you know, castle thing going on, and we got to see something different. We had a horse, for God's sakes. We have to give points for a horse.
Oh my goodness. I mean, just even Q's necklace thing that he wears as the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Which is similar to his judging one.
That's what I was about to say. It's the same design, but a different color scheme to his judge necklace. The set dressing and costuming is top notch. It's so, so good.
So there's that. Then there's the story, which I would give a lower ranking to just because I felt like it was a little bit loosey-goosey.
Bit fluffy.
But then like the acting, I really enjoyed the acting. I felt like, man, Beverly Crusher and just all these different kind of people that were acting. And then I would tank it for the jugs. Like, why can't the women
save it for the sins?
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about sins then.
No, I completely agree. I might be convinced to go up to three pips because it's fun.
Yeah.
But since we dug into the plot, I was like, oh, this really doesn't make any sense.
I feel like it's one that if you watch it as much as you watch it, it probably should be a three pipper for you.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think my conscience would shift this to three pips. It is just, it's fun. Anyway, with that, there are plenty of sins. Don't worry, we will be playful. We're not going to be playful. We're going to sin the heck out of this. To engineering, battle stations, red alert.
Boop, boop.
Warning, warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, you go first. I think I know what you want to do first.
It's really jarring when you see the difference between how men and women are allowed to fight in film.
It's horrible. This is going down to one pip.
I didn't do that on purpose. That just came out. That wasn't on purpose.
I'm so proud of you. It's going down to one pip. It stands out so much. And yes, we're in the 80s, the 90s, but we're also in the 2360s. Why are all of the men with swords and then fucking Deanna and Beverly are just derping around smashing pots over people's heads? It's so bad.
It is. It's an example. And I don't know that it's subtle now, but I feel like maybe even just like when we watch these things for entertainment, that there are some things that maybe stand out as really obvious ways to show sexism or the idea that women don't have the same abilities as a male character. This one is both a subtle shift and also just really it's so obvious to me now.
It's so obvious.
If maybe... Where did the jars come from? You know, like all these things. It's like
that's your problem.
Wait, show me and give me an understanding of why Beverly and Deanna had these as weapons, because it's all kind of being cut together in this epic
lots
battle.
Of quick cuts. Yeah.
It's like, you know, Geordi's over there just swashbuckling away, and then we have Potts.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, maybe have them scale a tree and chuck a rock would maybe be more believable than the flower pot on top of the head and the person like a cartoon, like, you know.
Yeah. You may as well have put in some of the flying cuckoos around people's heads.
Like, don't get me wrong, head injuries really can turn the tide of a battle. Like,
yeah.
Hitting somebody on the head definitely can stop an attack.
It's just so jarring that it's only them. And
yeah,
as a few people in the chat have mentioned, and I did some research online for this, Marina Sirtis and Gaius McFadden trained in sword fighting people. Literally the only people trained to use a sword while acting, and they're excluded. I want to know what they said on set.
There's so many,
know if they
probably
complained.
Nothing. Honestly, probably nothing, because you don't risk your career, right? Like, think about it, how many times you will hear stories now more than ever before of you literally do not want to shake the boat.
Yeah.
You do not want to do it. And this isn't
really
like, so let's say that they're like, hey, I would love to have a sword. I actually know how to use it. And the person says, no, because your character would do this. Like, are you really going to push on it and risk your career?
People do, maybe not in the 90s or even,
no,
maybe they
don't. I
don't
think that they do.
It's so weird.
And honestly, having been in a few situations myself where it's like, what's the choice? What choice do I make here? Do I make a point now, or do I just let this be what it is and regroup myself and look for something else to do with my life because I don't want to be around this? It's a choice. Like, there's been several times I've had a boss that literally the only difference between me and the person beside me and everything else about our jobs is just that I'm a female. And it's really weird, and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to break those norms. So seeing something like that, yeah, definitely ruined it for me a bit.
Yeah, for what Star Trek stands for, I think the writers would be aware of it as well. It's just so peculiar, both outside of the world and actually in universe as well. It feels like a very strange distinction. It's very, very, especially with Tasha. Like, you know, Tasha Yar exists. Like, you didn't have a problem with her being kick-ass. Like, it's just so strange to me. Is it because she's a doctor? McCoy got into fist fights. Like,
yeah, like a do no harm. Like, if I give you a concussion and crack your skull, that's easier to fix than, you know, if I impale you.
Yeah,
and
it's so strange.
If I break some lungs. But also, like, are we really talking about them hurting people, or is this all a delusional
cue thing?
Of course,
it's all fiction. Yeah.
So there isn't really anything to worry for if every character in this Nottingham thing just doesn't exist anyway. So she might not be as inclined to do no harm if she knows that they're not real. So I would love to have seen my girls right next to my guys with the same weaponry.
It would have been so fun.
Or their fucking bow and arrow, which we saw Deanna use.
Deanna, come on. Yeah, but friendly fire. And honestly,
shards of pottery is friendly fire too. Sorry, go ahead.
maybe if Frakes hadn't had a sword, he wouldn't have got injured as well.
Right.
So he actually got hit by one of the extras and they cut his eye.
Who?
Frakes.
Really?
Uh-huh. Riker actually got, I don't think you can actually see it in the show, but an extra went a bit extra, destroyed his quarterstaff and struck him across the eye with a sword, went straight to the emergency room in full Little John outfit as well, and had to explain what was going on.
Well, yeah. I would assume that in that moment you would have both the actors for Beverly and Deanna exchange a look, like,
do you know what, maybe if he'd been trained in sword fighting that wouldn't have happened.
Maybe if they would have leaned on our expertise, this could have been avoided.
It's
but
amazing.
You know what, that's what it is.
Well, I have a lot of sins that we mentioned, which was like, Vash, get your shoes off my chair.
Oh my god, made
just
me so
the disrespect
mad.
For the captain's chair,
so
just
disrespectful,
so mad. But my big one, my big one, other than the lack of women sword fighting, is Picard's choice of venue for his speech. You have
Really?
Yeah.
What a nitpicky thing.
We talk about a lot. This is my next really big one. You have a holodeck, sir. Like, you could write the most mundane speech in the world, but what you do is that you get Geordi to program a tour through the, what is it, the Temerians, whatever it is, a tour through these ancient ruins and civilizations, and you have, like, these visuals and this environment to accompany your speech as well. I don't know why you would ever give a lecture in what I think is 10 forward, like, just with all of the furniture stripped out. Why wouldn't you do that shit in the holodeck? It would be incredible.
You're not wrong.
It would be so fun. What's your next sin, Ambassador?
There's the Q, how's the peepin'. That's an easy one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just Q, like, just appearing in the room, oh. Just sort of like...
That actually was one of my sins. That is so for us and no one else. Like, Q is this omnipotent being. He doesn't need to physically put his head in the room after the conversation here. Who was that for? That wasn't for anybody but us. What are you doing, Q?
Yeah. Yeah. Q is an interesting character.
Yeah.
What about you?
So I have got poor fucking Worf loses the sword fight. And I'm not necessarily sinning that he lost, because Q's created this being that might be super powerful and able to overpower Worf. It's just the disrespect that TNG shows Worf so consistently. Like, he's a swordsman. Like, yeah, it's with a bat lift, that's different to a long sword or whatever, but your man should have done a better job. Like, give him this one. Like, and to be honest, Worf should have gone for the horse. He shouldn't have gone for Sagai. Like, you stab the horse and it crushes the rider. Like, Worf just, like, the disrespect is unreal.
Let's see that happen on a set.
Yeah, let's see that happen 7 p.m. on a Saturday.
Imagine how many letters Star Trek would have gotten from parents, from their children.
Like, a horse.
My child was watching.
Yep. I don't need this. So, yeah, but I just think poor Worf, he always gets, like, shit on in TNG, to be honest.
Poor Worf, indeed.
Yeah.
Can't do anything right.
Anything
Can't
else,
Can't do
Ambassador.
Anything wrong. We've kind of, like, said a lot sort of here and there. So I feel like we covered a lot.
Yeah, we kind of covered a lot of especially the plot stuff in the main episode, because Picard would just be excellent at cinema sins, but TV sins, everything.
Yeah, there is maybe just one more that, as I go back through the episode, I can't understand it. And that was, like, Vosh getting into Picard's room in the first place.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
I don't understand that part. Like,
it was so jarring that I forgot that she doesn't know Q yet. For some reason, I thought Q put her in there, but it's not that at all. Like, and Worf is offended that Vash is on the bridge. So how did she gain access to...
She didn't
go through security.
Mm-hmm.
Riker doesn't know who she is yet. All of the crew don't know who she is. So, I mean, she shouldn't have been able to hack her way into his quarters.
It was really confusing to me.
Yeah.
Like,
super weird.
You would think of all of the places to go, the bridge and the captain's quarters would be the most difficult to access.
You really would think they would be very secure.
Once again, another reason to not trust this character.
Yes. She can be anywhere at any time. Well, that's pretty much all I have for this beautifully whimsical, silly episode. Final thoughts on the love series that we've done, Ambassador. Has it enlightened you into how Star Trek deals with love?
I actually have been kind of impressed with how Star Trek deals with love, because they were all a little bit different from each other, especially the Deep Space Nine stuff. That was really on the point. Like, they straight up said, so are we having sex? Or, like, they went into the multiple love interest angle in a unique way. And I know that I was a little shaded because I thought that a couple of the characters were already married that weren't, but still.
Oh, understandable. Yeah.
I felt like Deep Space Nine was really edgy compared to maybe what I'm seeing with TNG and especially.
Super edgy.
TOS and TNG feel a little bit the same in that it's a really similar love story approach to what I would usually see kind of in the media from like this era. But Deep Space Nine certainly was more edgy. And I kind of enjoyed that.
Well, we could have done the whole season in DS9 as well. They have more of that on show.
Hands down, my favorite one though was the TOS one with Kirk and the going
City on
back
the edge
and
of forever. That's yeah, awesome.
That was hands down my favorite.
Oh, that's so fun. That's yeah. really, really cool because that is like, it's, if you ask like kind of the internet, it's held up as the greatest episode of Star Trek. So yeah, really, really interesting.
It was
that's
such
so
a
cool.
crazy episode for so many reasons.
Yeah.
And I think watching it and then learning about what it could have been was a total mind fuck.
Yeah, just the insanity of that, of Harlan Ellison just going crazy.
Yeah. And then like pressing on the idea again of like, you have to let somebody die so that you can go on. And we see kind of some of that too with Strange New Worlds, where
let the kid on the planet die.
Well, yeah, that. Oof. And then also when I can't remember her name, but she goes back in time and she sees her family's
Noonien Singh.
Yes.
La'an. Yeah,
La'an.
She has the opportunity to kill Khan, her great grandfather. Yeah,
so you've got these kind of moments, and I know that Star Trek plays on those themes, but for some reason that one didn't hit the same as this one.
Man, that episode should have been so much better. That's a great conceit. Like, La'an going back and choosing whether to kill Hitler or not is a great conceit, and buried by the Kirk romance. And I think that's the problem. It gets bogged down by the Kirk romance.
Well, for me, it grows on me the more that time has passed, because the more I learn about the La'an character, her opening up to anybody has to be pretty major, and for them to try to do the heavy lifting of reminding us about that. But then this Kirk episode on the Edge of Forever, that is very similar too. It's just the love thing just kind of comes out of nowhere. It's a bit distracting by the main point, which is that you have to let her die, and then all of a sudden the episode's over. So it's a really similar way of presenting a love story in a way.
Yeah, that's a good point actually.
So they're kind of, it's interesting too that it's Kirk and Khan, and it's Kirk and this other character who ends up.
Man, I wonder if that was deliberate.
It must have been deliberate.
It's just interesting. I haven't heard that point of view, but there is a huge parallel there between what Kirk had to do in his version, which obviously hasn't happened for him yet. That's really interesting. Man, we should rewatch season two of Strange New Worlds. I think that's the answer.
I love Strange New Worlds. I didn't like season two as much as season one, but
I'm pumped for it to come back. I'm so excited.
I go through. Is it coming back again? Or are we sure?
Oh, it's definitely.
Are we getting excited about it yet?
Knee deep in filming season three, so it's happening.
So
I don't
exciting.
Think they're finished. I think they're doing it. Yeah, I'd imagine early next year we'll have it.
We get into character. We go off to California, and we just show up on set and be like, "We're here."
What's the worst that could happen?
Arrest us.
Yeah,
that's probably what would happen.
Please arrest us. I want to have that story.
Yeah.
Okay, well, as we put love behind us in all of its unconventional forms and conventional and however you want to call it, we will move into our next theme, which is going to be time travel, and I'm so excited! So we had a lot of emails for romance. It was eclipsed by the amount of suggestions that we had for time travel. You guys are so excited for this as well. You've given me some great episode suggestions. I don't know how many episodes we're going to do. I think we're just going to keep going because there's so much time travel to choose from. But we are going to start with my all-time favorite episode of Star Trek and the one that just happened to have the most requests, Cause and Effect. And that is Season 5, Episode 18. Danae, I'm so excited to watch this episode. I love this episode so much. How do you feel about doing some time travel? How do you feel about time travel? I haven't even asked that.
I get nervous on time travel episodes because I have been in many conversations with very passionate people who are very picky about their time travel conversations. Mm-hmm. And I don't care as much as they do. And so I get a little nervous, like, I don't really care. But we do have to ask the hard questions, like, how does this work, you know? And
well, the conceit is that it doesn't work, so we won't be too harsh. We will do some sinning, but time travel does not work.
The other thing that makes me nervous as well on time travel is that oftentimes I'll come across a movie or a show that'll go through the time travel-ness, and by the end you're supposed to understand the fullness of what's just happened. And based on how we put this show together, we're gonna have very little time to process.
Mm-hmm.
But with you here having watched them multiple times, I'm sure I won't be as indifferent. I get a little bit like, you know, because I'm just going to watch it to be entertained, not have some unique thing. But I want to, I kind of want to have my mind blown a bit. I remember watching Inception for the first time, which definitely is not time travel, but feeling like, whoa, this is a really unique adventure.
There's an element of time travel to it. The last third of the movie, where they're in the different layers of dreams and time is moving differently, that is all about the perception of time and how that can affect things. That's, yeah, that's a really good example.
So I'm excited because I feel like when you do time travel, there is always going to be an element where you know that it's probably not going to make sense, but you're going to tell something really unique, and there's a reason to go back in time, or there's a reason to go forward in time. There's something that's happened that you have a chance to right or wrong. And that kind of storytelling, I think, makes us all feel really good about our lives because we want to be able to go back and fix something at times.
Yeah.
So these kinds of stories usually play into those themes. And of course, the theme of if you did fix one thing, what else would still happen, though? You know, you can't fix everything so that you have the perfect life, the perfect day, the perfect experience. You react to your giant and small fuck ups as best you can and surround yourself with people that are forgiving and kind as you are just a human. And so we can't time travel and fix our shit, but in TV and movies we can. So it's always fun to see these kinds of things play out. And honestly, I'm more excited about it than Love, because Love stuff gets really annoying for me. So I'm not at all upset that we're like just doing a quick little season of Love and then we're going to get on to some time travel. And then very quickly, we're going to do 2 episodes of time travel. And then we're going to get into the booty scoot. We want to see what Kirk does with all the ladies.
Oh, are we shifting from time travel back into just Kirk specific love?
Yeah, just Kirk, not even love, just Kirk nanigans.
Kirk fucking. I can absolutely.
I'm joking. We're not
confirm
doing that.
We will not be doing that. I can do time travel episodes for the rest of time. And the suggestions that we've had, to your point, are some very interesting ones. And I'm trying to skew to the ones where that use time interestingly rather than just we needed time travel.
Right.
And then like kind of the thought ends there. There are some really interesting how does time travel get wonky episodes in here, which I honestly, I'm a sucker for time travel. I'll be rating all of these episodes 4 pips out of 4 pips.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this.
I guess that's a prediction for the future. Are we going to bring back the predictions part of our show that we have just forgotten about?
It depends. If you're happy to do predictions, then we will absolutely do predictions.
Let's try predictions.
Sounds good.
I also like a comment that said that we broke it into 3 categories: time travel, time loop, and time manipulation.
Yeah, somebody sent an excellent email with loads of it may well have been Paulie, I can't remember, but they sent an email breaking down time travel was basically too vague. I've broken down my suggestions into this and this for these reasons, and I'm like, I love your essay, sir. Tell me more. Give me an essay on this. I could write essays about time travel.
Maybe this season should just be called Timey Wimey.
Yeah, Timey Wimey. Let's just steal it straight from Doctor Who. We just do Doctor Who episodes like we said the other week.
Is that what Doctor Who did?
Yeah, that's where Timey Wimey comes from. It's a timey-wimey soup.
Things I didn't know before today.
Yep. The episode is called Blink. Okay, until next week, everyone, or last week, depending on how this time travel works out, you can send us your suggestions still. There's plenty of time at CaptainsPodCS on Twitter/X, CaptainsPod at cinemasins.com, or on the Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins. We love talking to you all. You're the best. We will see you next week for Cause and Effect. And until then, I'm Captain Ian. And of course, I am not a merry man.
And it's get out of my chair from me.
Live long and prosper.
Get out of my chair.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Oh, man, I forgot my coffee. Oh, what do? I really want a coffee. He's not here yet. I'm going to go get a coffee. Yeah, that'll be fine. He won't give me shit.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I got so mad I had to buy a new cardigan.
Why'd you get mad?
Because of the internet situation.
This is your, I'm so mad that the internet went out, so I got a cardigan?
Yes. Well, when you say it like that, it sounds weird.
Is this something you do? You know, like some people have retail therapy for various reasons. You know, they're sad, they're stressed. Do you do retail therapy too? Or is it just strictly cardigans?
I think it was like, it was in my basket. And I was like, I'm going to buy it because I like cardigans and I'm overdue a new one and I needed to do something proactive.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's not really as exciting as what I thought happened.
Oh, what did you think happened?
In my imagination, the internet goes out and you go into a rage. You call the company. You realize they're not coming for days. We're going to have to reschedule the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so you grab your keys, you storm to your car, and you just drive to the store and buy a cardigan.
Oh, no, that's a... Okay, A, that's a terrible idea. Don't drive if you're angry. Do not... I deliberately didn't drive anywhere because I don't... We don't need to be in front of, like, hundreds of horsepower of car. And, like, these things can kill people on good days. Like, don't be angry when you drive, people. Do not underestimate the metal boxes of doom. I was relegated to Starbase 80 for about a day and a half where there was just no internet, no subspace comms, nothing. Just me and my phone being angry. I had to watch, get this, Danae and audience, I had to watch physical media. They have these Blu-ray discs and I had to put them into my Blu-ray disc player and I got to watch actual movies on the actual TV. Yeah.
What would happen if that didn't work?
God, no.
Would you jump in the car and go to like a thrift store and find a VHS player and some old like family videos that are in a tub in the back of the building somewhere?
You do not want to watch those. Whatever is in that tub. What shops have you been in that have a tub of VHSs in them?
Just a reminder, this is an R-rated show.
Yeah, fuck that. I was genuinely worried because I was playing the modern Xbox One and I was like, does the disc drive in this thing even work anymore? It's so old. So I was like, what do I do next? I have been waiting for an opportunity to do some odd bits around the house and like, but I just, I wasn't in the brain space to do that. I was like, there is no positive here. I am not using this as an opportunity because I've been fucked to go and do something productive with my life.
Imagine how bad of an idea it is to do anger remodeling.
It would be terrible, terrible idea. I turned everything off because I was like, fine, if the internet doesn't work, I'm not going to pay for the electricity to power it. So everything got turned off. I'm just sat in the dark. My phone internet obviously still works. I pressed the button and then I bought a cardigan.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, it's annoying because the next text that I got once I'd booked the engineer was, we've cancelled your engineer for Monday. I was like, what? And then there's another text that says, this is a local area outage and we'll have it fixed by tomorrow at 3 a.m.
It would be nice if they would have said, hey, we recognize there's a problem, and then said, we've cancelled your engineer.
Yes, but let's get that in one message or in the right order. What's annoying is that part of their terms and conditions is that they will refund part of my bill if there's been an outage for 3 days. But anything less than 3 days, they don't have to do anything. It's utter bullshit. Like, this, it should be provided by the state, Danae. We should not be, and yes, they'd fuck it up too, but we should not be at the whim of private companies for internet. Like, it is an important thing. Like, my job depends on the internet.
And it's interesting to hear you say that because, like, for me living in America, I cringe at the idea of a state-funded internet versus having a private company fund my internet. Like, I would rather pay for a private company because I feel like that'd be more dependable than the state.
Well, that's because we're lucky enough to be in a position to pay for it. But in an ideal situation, yeah. Private, the whole idea of capitalism is that you increase competition. So instead of the state dictating who gets what access and where, private companies are in competition with us to give great service and good money. But the problem is there's like two companies that provide internet that are main companies. Yeah. There's no competition at all. There's no incentive to do well.
Nobody wants that bullshit job.
But it's also bullshit if the government does it, because then they won't spend the right amount of money on it. They'll cut corners and then eventually sell it off to private companies anyway. So there is no perfect system.
Really, the silver lining is that no matter what, someone's going to fuck it up and you're going to get a cardigan.
And this is why I'm fed up of human beings.
I think you should focus on the cardigan. Like, I don't know why, but the internet conversation made me remember that I once lived in the same, like, very, very close proximity to a hospital, mm-hmm. one of the city's two main hospitals. And I never had to worry about power outages. I never had to worry about internet issues.
Because they prioritized the hospital?
And I had the most amazing water pressure.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Because I was, like, right in the zone. Yeah.
Well, I guess, and you're also close to a hospital if anything goes wrong.
Literally within walking distance. I
Why
could just walk
people
there.
People live near hospitals? Maybe they do.
I mean, only so many people can live near one.
No, that's true. And I guess you have the downside of being in like a built-up area and like an inner city thing.
You know what? We could probably think of what's wrong with just about everything. Let's think about the positives.
No. What? What? How un-English of me.
Interesting fact. According to Patrick Stewart's autobiography, he and Jennifer Hetrick Vosh were in a relationship for a while after Captain's Holiday, and it ended his first marriage.
Oh, golly. Depending on how long that relationship lasted, that would have made this episode quite awkward.
I did forget a part. This was going to be my quote before I just got really hung up on the chair thing. It's when Riker says, "I'll alert the crew." It was just so funny.
Oh, I had that note as well. It's so good.
Because he's like, "I've been visited by Q," and he's like, "I'll alert the crew." It was almost like Riker was annoyed to be brought in. He's like, "What is it?"
Yeah, Picard is like, "I've just been visited by Q." Riker is like, "Oh, okay." And he says, "Picard, Q wants to do something nice for me." And then Riker's like, "I'll alert the crew." Like, immediately, that means that's funny. Not good. This is not good. David Ellis says, "Sin, all the Robin Hood shenanigans could have been avoided and Picard's speech improved if Jean-Luc had only taken Q up on his time travel archaeology offer." Yeah, and that's an interesting episode as well, but I think budget. I think this was a relatively cheap episode to throw together.
Look at this comment. This is from CDR. When we're talking about La'an and Kirk, "I still think that some relationship between La'an and Kirk is the reason why Kirk strands Khan on that place rather than bringing him in." So, like, Kirk's relationship with La'an...
But that Kirk died. There is no relationship.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a blooming relationship happening, but she hasn't revealed who she is yet to the Kirk that we have.
No, but no, he knows, though.
He does.
I think he knows. No, he may not know.
I don't remember.
No, he should know.
I don't remember.
What makes this weird is that in Space Seed, when they first meet Khan, Kirk isn't just like, "Oh, hey, I knew your great-great-great-granddaughter." Obviously, because it hasn't happened yet.
We fucked once.
I agreed with this wandering winder. Also, Q feeling this debt, A, at all, and two, right now makes no sense. Like, it's he shouldn't care about this debt at all. He's an omnipotent being. It shouldn't be gnawing on him at all. Commander Smith says, "I would absolutely love a Lower Decks scene where there is a post-Q therapy group." That should exist. All of the people that have had to deal with Q shenanigans at some point get together and just share his abuse.
You know that they need to find each other.
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
Q nanigans. It's the Q. It's like QAnon, but it's
QAnon.
Q-nanimous.
Stop it. Q-nanimous? Q-nanimous? No, because unanimous, that sounds like unanimous. Q-nanimous.
Q-nanimous.
Q-nanimous. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. No. Yeah. Yeah. QAnon was not a great idea. No, that was terrible. No, we're pretending like they didn't say that.
I love that Danae is kind of done with love, despite, I think, the love season was her idea.
100%.
Welcome to podcasting with Danae.
But I wanted to see lizard love. That's the kind of love. Well, we'll probably watch that, like, when we're just hanging out sometime. You're like, "You know what? It's time. We're going
to
watch
it." No, we have to do an episode on it. It's too notorious. It's one day you will see in the podcast feed Voyager Threshold. Oh, golly.
Is it coming back again? Are we sure?
Oh, it's definitely.
Are we getting excited about it yet?
knee-deep in filming season 3. So it's happening. So I don't think they're finished. I think they're doing it. Yeah, I'd imagine early next year we'll have it.
We get into character. We go off to California. And we just show up on set and be like, we're here.
What's the worst that could happen?
Arrest us. Yeah. That's probably what would happen. David. The worst thing that could happen is you go to the wrong studio. They shoot Strange New Worlds in Toronto, not California.
Oh, no. It's true. Oh, damn it. Thank you, David. Shit.